At 15, I stood before Josef Mengele at Auschwitz, not yet recognizing the angel of death in his elegant monocle and shining leather boots. That day in 1944, my mother, 5-year-old brother, sister Rivka, and grandparents were sent left to their deaths. My father, sister Simka, and I were sent right. Hours later, my father made the heartbreaking decision that we must separate to survive. "You are young and strong," he insisted. "If you survive by yourself, you must honor us by living, by not feeling sorry for us." I never saw him again. Each morning at 4:30, we endured roll call, where any sign of weakness meant selection for the crematorium. The ovens burned day and night. I forced myself to eat whatever was given, rancid coffee, soup with hair and insects, sawdust-filled bread, knowing that to be sick meant death. Killings were frequent and without provocation, a systematic psychological torture breaking our belief in the rewards of goodness. My first job was washing Nazi uniforms. When I accidentally tore an SS officer's shirt collar, he beat me mercilessly. A fellow prisoner taught me to sew, and I mended the shirt, then secretly wore it under my striped uniform. Strangely, both prisoners and guards treated me better when I wore it. That moment marked the beginning of my life's work. 2 ripped Nazi shirts helped build America's most prestigious custom suit company. By January 1945, as Russian forces approached, the Germans forced prisoners on death marches, executing those who lagged. With 2 others, I lightened a German soldier's pack, discarding ammunition and sharing his bread. During a rest, I hid in snow until the column passed, leaving only frozen corpses behind. American forces liberated Buchenwald on April 11, 1945. General Eisenhower visited, ordering his soldiers to tour the camp. Now, at least, he will know what he is fighting against. Despite liberation, 1,000 prisoners died within days. The Buchenwald clock remains frozen at 3:15, our moment of freedom. Driven by rage, I joined 2 Jewish boys seeking revenge against the Weimar mayor's wife who had ordered my beating. Confronting her as she held her baby, I couldn't shoot, refusing to become like Mengele, who killed my mother and brother. We took their Mercedes instead. A 1945 Life magazine article revealed the mayor and his wife later committed suicide after witnessing Buchenwald's horrors. Justice prevailed without my intervention. This choice not to become what I despised shaped my future. Our hardest decisions reveal our true character. After serving in the Czechoslovakian army and running a cigarette business, I learned of my father's execution at Buchenwald. When Russian communists began infiltrating the Czech government, I knew I had to leave. I wouldn't face tyranny again. A letter from Uncle Irving in Baltimore offered passage to America. On September 11, 1947, I departed on the SS Ernie Pyle. As Germany faded, keeper of my family's blood and ashes, I silently promised to honor my father's final words. On September 18th, New York's glittering skyline appeared like diamonds across the dark horizon. The next morning, an immigration official declared, "You are an American, but not a citizen." In Baltimore, I moved in with my cousin's family and changed my name from Maximilian Grunfeld to Martin Greenfield, a name easier to pronounce and spell. I started at GG making $35 a week as a floor boy. When I nearly quit, manager Adolf Rosenberg showed me all 108 operations behind creating a GG suit, transforming my perspective. I committed to mastering every task, determined to become indispensable. William P. Goldman treated workers with dignity and kept his promises. He'd invite workers to lunch with one rule: no work talk. Within 6 months, I'd advanced from floor boy to blind stitcher. When he offered to make me an assistant supervisor instead of pursuing medicine, he quipped, "I'll make you a suit doctor." His philosophy was simple: superior materials and craftsmanship justify higher prices. By 1956, I had become head quality inspector, earning $110 weekly. That April, I met Arlene Bergen, an executive secretary. We married in December, with Mr. Goldman blessing the challa at our wedding. Our sons Jay and Todd were born in 1958 and 1960, completing my dream of a family. In 1977, I purchased the Brooklyn GGG factory for $100,000 and established Martin Greenfield Clothiers. The boutique quickly attracted prestigious retailers seeking hand-tailored suits. My first political client was General Eisenhower, my liberator. As president, I secretly placed foreign policy notes in his jacket pockets, sharing insights on matters like the Suez Crisis. I've dressed every president since, each uniquely. For President Ford, the Secret Service ordered two identical vests, one bulletproof with Velcro, another unprotected for discreet changes. We upgraded President Clinton's casual wardrobe to elegant suits and tuxedos. For President Obama, we added exclusive red, white, and blue stitching in his jacket linings. Colin Powell was moved to tears during his factory visit, watching our seamstress's work, reminded of his immigrant mother who worked as a seamstress from Jamaica. We've crafted suits for major films like The Great Gatsby, dressing Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, and Joel Edgerton. Our work with HBO's Boardwalk Empire spanned 5 seasons, creating 600 suits for 173 characters. For Michael Jackson's This Is It tour, we designed elaborate costumes with silk, wool, metallic buttonholes, and gold chains. He wore them at rehearsal just days before his passing. Movie costume design balances directorial vision with actors' preferences, as shown in our work with Russell Brand and Arthur. Our clientele includes athletes like LeBron James and Shaquille O'Neal, requiring suits up to size 58. Martin Greenfield Clothiers continue serving presidents, celebrities, and power brokers, maintaining the handwork techniques I learned during the Holocaust. My sons Jay and Todd now lead the business with scientific precision, while my grandchildren Amy, David, Rachel, and Sophia carry our legacy forward. At 80, I celebrated my bar mitzvah at Hampton Synagogue, officiated by Rabbi Mark Schneier, whose bar mitzvah suit I had made years before. During the ceremony, I imagined my lost family watching with joy. When Rabbi Schneier draped the prayer shawl over me, I felt God's presence. Only one explanation fits my survival. God allowed America to make me possible. Despite countless ways I could have died, in the camps, on the death march, or from other dangers, I survived to find family, marry my dream girl, raise wonderful sons, and build my American dream in Brooklyn. What measures a man? Not just the elegant suits I create, but the journey from darkness to light, from concentration camp prisoner to presidential tailor. It's choosing life over bitterness and finding purpose in precise stitches that bind fabric and memory. My story shows that even from history's darkest moments, we can fashion something beautiful if we dare to begin again.